People have been talking about experiences with community participation, empowerment, and social capital development. And at the end, we're going to be looking at a specific case in Peru, but I want to start out with a much broader look of how we get there and how we can really get program success in a national program. And since it's 35 years after Alma Ata, we're going to start with looking at that. Nothing to disclose. Okay, so the main points of the presentation, we're going to look at a little bit about the Alma Ata vision of primary health care, how we stray from that, and a strategy for getting back to it. And specifically looking at the seed scale methodology for community change, community empowerment, capital development, through a whole methodology. And then as a specific case, looking at the local health administration committees in Peru as a demonstration of the seed scale methodology, how community participation and empowerment can improve health outcomes and address equity. So a lot of what I'm going to be talking about is originated with Dr. Carl Taylor. Has anybody heard of Carl Taylor in the room? Okay, he was the founder of the International Health Department at Johns Hopkins University. He was also the founder of the National Council for International Health, which was what was turned into the Global Health Council. And he was one of the main architects of the Alma Ata Declaration from 1978. So going to that Alma Ata conference, theme of the conference was health for all. And I wanted to just take a minute to tell you a funny anecdote about that conference, because Carl Taylor was sitting on the dais as one of the architects, one of the drafters of the declaration, and he was taking notes during the whole conference, and he was jotting down people of what the inflection was when they were talking about health for all or health for all. And so he just took all these notes down, and then 30 years later, he found these notes back, and he was looking at it. But he had discovered that of the 147 references that he had tabulated, one type of inflection was mainly for people from the developed world, for the first world, which was the health for all, and the health for all was the people from the developing world. And so he has found that over 30 years that had really been true, that the health for all had really predominated in the whole development of health, where it was becoming a much more technological type of approach, you know, the professional approach to international health, global health, and we had really lost the health for all view. So if you look at Alma Ata and its successors, people who have studied this know that Alma Ata was a very broad view of a new paradigm of working with, you know, doing health care in the community, with looking at community participation, equity, health care closer to the people, integrated approach. But then within 6 years, GOBI took over, which is, you know, vertical primary health care, with GOBI growth monitoring, oral rehydration, breastfeeding, and immunizations, you know, very vertical approach. And then that was added on the three Fs, family planning, feeding, and female education. Then IMCI, integrated management of childhood and infection illnesses. And then so on, then finally adding in the M and the MCH for MNCH and the neonatal. And then we're getting a little bit broader now and more recently with the Promise Renew. However, as Dr. Houghton Mueller, ex-Secretary General of WHO, who was a very good lifelong friend of Carl Taylor's and who presided over the Alma Ata conference, in 2009, he said, we had it wrong in 2008. What came about was health for all instead of health for all, as the business of health stole the idea. So this came from the Secretary General, Dr. Houghton Mueller, who continues to be alive at the age of 93 or 94. So what is lost and still not found? Community in most global health programs. This was mentioned by our values of equity and sustainability, process of how to approach a community. So in 1990, James Grant, who was head of UNICEF, who was also a very good friend of Carl Taylor and his son Daniel Taylor, they were discussing why do we have all of these programs and all this international health investment in programs that in 4 years you make a lot of progress in communities and then you leave, the international agent leaves, and then all of the work falls apart and the community goes back to what it was before, you know, once you take out the financing. And so they, James Grant charged Carl Taylor and his son to conduct a study to examine the dynamics of social change and find out what is it that we're doing wrong and what can we do better. So out of this, they did a study, the Taylors did a global study of successes in the world, experiences in the world that had achieved equity and that had gone to scale with sustainability. And they looked at all of these experiences and found out what were the common elements in these experiences that we could put together and say that this is what are the factors that need to be in place. Okay? So that's how the seed scale methodology came out, and I'm going to explain a little bit. But the core group, the core concept is to find a seed of human energy. So it's all based on human energy. And you could also talk about that in terms of social capital. Okay, what is the energy of the people in the community? This is social capital. And build on that. Okay, so it's an what is the activity that the community did that was a success, the seed? And then you grow that seed to scale, seed scale. But actually seed and scale are actually acronyms for much more complicated, you know, concepts. But so seed scale is not just a tool in the International Development Toolbox, it's kind of an entire approach, which is really kind of the next generation of what is the whole Ama'ata concept of development. So it allows communities to use what they have. It starts with what they already have, their own resources, and where they are with their own constraints. So this is really the methodology, 5 criteria, 4 principles, 7 annual tasks, and 3 levels of scale. Very simple. Okay. Future Generations also has a 2-year master's program to teach how to actually do this. There's 2 books. But it's really quite simple to understand. I'm going to go through the five criteria, which are criteria that should be in place that could be used for planning and also for evaluation. Okay, does your project promote equity? Is your project designed for sustainability, for holism, not just health, but other things that the community is interested in? Interdependence, that the community is not dependent, but it's also not totally independent. Interdependence with government and with other agencies. And iteration, which is you're not going to get it right the first time. You have to go over and over and see what works and see what doesn't work. There are 4 principles. The first one is building on success. This is the most important principle for a community to work with. So what you do in the community is the community identifies what is working, or you help the community to identify what have they done good, what have they already done good, and then you build on that, you take the next step. Okay, so every community is at a different phase in its own development. So you find out what they've done good and where they can, and then they decide themselves where they can go next. So one success leads to the next, and it builds energy. And this is opposed to most programs that don't look at success, rather they focus on problems. They focus on the poverty, the bad roads, the poor schools, and it's kind of like the communities start to perceive themselves as deficient, and therefore they're less likely to believe that they can actually solve their own problems. And then they become dependent on who's going to come in and help me solve my problem. Okay, so the conventional needs analysis is very demoralizing. So the building on success is very similar to, and it's also drawn from, other development strategies that build on success, such as positive deviance, participatory rural appraisal, success mapping, et cetera. Those are all fit under this kind of category, you know, seeing what they did and what have they done well. Okay. Second principle, 3-way partnership is very important. So you have the top-down enabling environment, the red, which is usually the government, okay, the bottom-up community mobilization, and then you have the outside-in ideas, and that's universities, NGOs coming in with new ideas to generate, not necessarily coming in with money. The money and the policies come from the top down, and it's better, you can get some money from the outside, but not too much, in the bottom-up community. And so you need these three-way partnerships in order to have forward momentum. And you cannot have only two of these. You have to have the three to have real community change. Evidence-based decisions is when in a community is, again, doing its own mapping, looking at its own situation, identifying its own indicators and finding out where they are, and then getting behind what they want to do, which leads to the next one, which is planning. But versus traditional development where opposed to evidence, from local evidence, the decisions are made by who has the power, who has the money, who has the power. Somebody's coming in from the outside and saying, you're going to do this, we're going to do this. Okay? So it's based on local information. And then the fourth principle is that behavior change is based on the local assessment and then doing local planning and people taking on new roles. It's a functional analysis of roles in the community and saying, okay, in order to solve this problem, I volunteer to do this, you volunteer to do this, and so people are actually changing their behavior of how they're doing things in the community, and we use a simple work plan that's done for every 3 months. The community can just pick one or two things that they can prioritize, that they can do themselves, and then they work that out, and then that's another success. And then they do another plan. So it's like iterative doing local plans and success. So then we go to the seven tasks. So we already looked at the five criteria, the four principles, and we have the seven tasks. And the seven tasks, this is really an operational method. This is how to put SeedScale into an operational form that can be used. The seven tasks are done at the with each partner or community that's involved in this project. Now, who is a community? A community can be like a health facility. It's a community in itself. Okay, the community, as we know, think of a community as a community. So each community can go through these seven steps. Even the government can go through these seven steps. The first step, and this is what has been shown to really work, is you create a committee. So you have a management committee in a health facility, you have a local community committee, or you have in the government, in the local government, you have like a multi-sectoral municipal committee. Okay. You have your committee, people working together, that's also generating social capital. You know, you're starting to organize. You identify your local successes. Then this is very important too. You study successes elsewhere. And this is another thing that generates your energy because you go, the committee can go to another community, to another health center. You see, what are they doing? Because somebody else is always doing something good. So you go see what other people are doing, your peers, and then you come back energized. Say, we can do that even better. And then they get energized, and they've seen it in action someplace else, and they know that they can do it themselves. Gather local evidence to get some baseline indicators. Again, create your local work plan. This is one of the principles. And then you actually implement the plan, just a small action that all the community can work with themselves, and get a success. You make mid-course corrections and do an iterative replanning. So that's to get to seed. Okay, that if you're doing all of those things, you can create an area or a community or a health system in a small area even as a model of what's really working well. Okay, so that's called scale one. So we have three levels of scale. So this is like, see this little community down there? This is an empowered community system supported in a three-way partnership where you have everything working, the criteria, the principles, and the steps or the tasks. Now, scale squared is when this area becomes a training center. They become an observational center so people from other areas can come and visit them and see how they do it. Then they go back. Okay, so then you start getting your scaling up. So the Scale Squared Center, you become an observational learning and teaching center, And we've done this in Peru, where we develop a scale one center, and then we actually teach the local, we teach the health promoters, we teach the health personnel how to teach other people, how to teach their peers what they do. Okay, and we give them facilitation skills using adult education methodology and educational materials. And then Scale Cube, this is the third level of scale, which is really the policy and the financing environment. This goes to the government level, where the government is seeing that this new model is actually working, and they put that into law, or they put that into regulations. So that's the Scale Cubed environment. Okay, so I got the 5 minutes. So the experience in Peru is, and I made this presentation earlier today, but looking at this very specifically, this is general public sector primary health care, probably in most of the world, where you have the regional health directorate, you have management offices, and you have primary health care facility that works on national health programs, and the roles with the community are very poorly defined from the primary health care. Then you might have the local government over there that kind of should do something in health but doesn't know what to do. So in 1994, there was a new program put into place, kind of based on this developing seed scale methodology. Carl Taylor actually gave advice to the government of Peru to how to do community participation. And the country developed this program, where there were members from the community and the doctor from the primary health care facility. They created their local committee, which is called a CLAF. It's a local health administration committee sitting over there with the board of directors. And it's a legal nonprofit organization it's a co-management agreement with the community. So it's government, community, collaborative management. And the government, through a shared administration contract, which is a legally bound contract, the government transfers funding to the bank account that's run by the CLAS, and the CLAS treasurer and the manager in the health facility write the checks, and they pay the doctors, and they buy the medicines, and they contract for infrastructure. So right now there's 500, actually it's wrong, it's 853 CLAS now co-manage one-third of all primary health care facilities in Peru. So this is scaled up to one-third of the entire country, the one-third. So it's really huge and very effective scaling up process. And so now the next phase is improving the quality of the relationships with CLAS, because just forming this committee is not enough. And so what you have in the blue is what the outside-in agent, which is our organization in this case, is developing better relationships. They're defining the relationships, defining the roles and the responsibilities from the primary healthcare sector to the communities, and from the municipality, what is their role with the community, and also what is the role of the community to do community work plans. So they link with, they're able to take their plan and go to the municipality and say, please fund this. And due to other laws that are providing more funding to municipalities, then they like that, because then they know what they can fund in the communities. Before, they were just kind of deciding, you know, sitting in the office saying, well, we're going to fund this. But now they know what the communities really need. And so going to the Scale Cubed, we have, with the policy environment, there's now a new law on CLAS, which is taken into consideration the lessons learned over the previous, from 1996 to 2007, so 11 years. So this strengthened the range of government and community collaborative management and of primary health care services. So it kind of changed the structure and improved the legal regulations. But you still had the roles and functions poorly defined. And so we continue to work with them under the new structure of CLAS, you know, still working with community health work plans and the sectorization strategy, and also with the Community Health Worker Association to improve the quality and to actually get impact. So the question that the other speaker was, how do you get maternal child health impact from social capital? Well, I'd say from this model, social capital is not enough. You also have to really define better what is the role of the health sector in working with the community and working with community health workers and how those two are linked, and providing the educational materials, the messages, the strategies for real health, so then you could build, so the social capital then can be put into action. So I think that's, how many minutes? 2 minutes, okay. So the C-scale is different from traditional development in terms of what is the key resource of C-scale? Human energy is what the main resource in C-scale, whereas money is the main resource in traditional development. The planning mindset is growth in nature. So you start from what there is, and you make it grow. And the other one is traditionally engineer a building. You say, what is your whole project? And you build that project, okay? The planning process in C-scale, you start with a plan, and then you get the budget that you need to finance that. Whereas the other, traditionally, you have a budget, and then you make your plan. Who does the work in C-scale? So three partners. It's the outside in, plus the community, which has new roles, and the government, which has new roles. It has to get a new mindset of what is their relationship with the community. And in traditional development, it's mainly professionals that are coming in, you know, and telling people what to do. The primary stakeholder in C-scale community and in traditional development, the donor is the stakeholder. The approach, build on success, and traditionally you're fixing a problem. You're looking at what is the need, okay? What is the problem that you're trying to fix? You're guided by evidence and C-scale and traditional development. Hopefully you're also building on evidence, but very frequently it ends up to be more who has the power, who, you know, who has the strongest opinions, and that's what is our habit. And that even works down at the community level. You know, if the community leader is making the decisions, just because he has the power, then he gets to make the decision. The major outcome is behavior change versus measurable results. The success is evaluated by the criteria and the strengthening the principles, traditional development, budget compliance. You know, you just have to do your financial reporting and maybe look at some indicators, and then that's your success. The process is iterative learning. Again, one of the criteria is a process you do step by step. Maybe you don't have success the first time in the community because they're learning. You have to be very patient with the community. And this goes on for a long time. So the difference with traditional development is that you have to do it the right the first time because it has to be done fast. You know, in 4 years, you have to have results. Whereas the seed scale process generally does take a long time, especially the startup is much longer because you have to build capacity in the communities. But even we've had the experience, and by the end of 4 years, you've really caught up, even though the first phase is much longer. And the management mode is more mentoring versus control. So there are two books on seed scale, and if you want to read more about this, you can look at www.seedscale.org, which is the Future Generations website that has toolkits and a lot of information on how to apply seed scale, and also our institutional websites, future.org and future.edu for our master's program in community change, which is an online distance learning where we have now graduates from 35 different countries, mid-level professionals who are applying seed scale in their own countries. Thank you very much.
We have our four presenters at the front now to answer questions. So we had four really complementary presentations, which are really apt to what's happening at the moment in the world. There's much less money coming from, for example, in the US, we know a lot less money is available for development, and that's probably going to decrease in the future. It's happened in Canada, it's happened in Australia, it's happening across the EU. It might not be a bad thing in some ways, because some of these things which people have not been considered before, people will start to think about more. A typical program might be that it runs for 4 to 5 years. For example, in immunisation, the coverage increases. Once the external support disappears, the program goes down backwards. because there isn't a community ownership there. The learning, there's two things. There's learning and there's action. So the learning takes place amongst people like us, policymakers, technical experts, etc. The action takes place in the community. But the two are disjointed. The community has got unique knowledge to offer. The difference between community as worked on and community as partner. So if you look at these four presentations together, and I do hope you follow up with the authors and with the slides and things, you're really getting a good opportunity to get some key insights. So I'll leave it over to you now for any questions. There's two ways you can get them. Are you all willing to make your presentations available to them other than Essential Learning?
They are available online, but yeah. I think that, you have to pay $40 to have the Essential Learning, if you have access to all the hundreds of presentations
and
the entire
education. Yeah.
There's
two ways. One is if you pay the extra $50 and join, get the Essential Learning, and that makes all presentations available to you. What happens is you get the oral, but you don't get the slides. There's another way, and that is if you join APHA and become a member of the International Health Section, if the four members here are willing, I can make these slides available to you. Special thing. Yeah.
I have a question about when you're talking about social norms, negative social norms, and so in your when you look at that and you try to change behavior, what are your thoughts about changing behavior and how that could adversely affect social capital? And have you seen any studies done on that?
Where this very thing came up. So we're able to disaggregate bonding and bridging, social capital, bonding capital being religious and caste groups in India, bridging capital being women's groups, savings and credit groups, that sort, where people are participating in these groups. But with preventive health behaviors, the antenatal care and immunization, where there may be some negative perceptions amongst some of those groups, there's actually a negative association of the practice of those behaviors and high levels of bonding social capital or being a member of those types of groups. Whereas a more emergent type of care, like delivery care, that there's actually a positive association. So people are going to their closest friends to get resources and access that care. But when it's more of a perception or a norm of, well, do I really need antenatal care? Is that something that I should do? Then yeah, you have to be careful with that. There are studies that with smoking too, where you see if there is a norm of smoking behavior and you increase social capital, it doesn't necessarily prevent that particular behavior. It could actually increase it. So I think it's really important to use a lot of the methods that have been talked about here and thinking about with the community about what is an appropriate behavior, why is it appropriate, not to ignore the benefit of those groups. It's not to say, well, we shouldn't build social capital, but I think you have to be very careful. You can't just go into a community and say we're going to build social capital, it'll have a positive impact. But you have to look at resources that are available and what's in the normal practices are. So I mean, it's a great question, and I think there are some ways in order to address that in a creative way. But
from our point of view, I think there's one simple thing, and what's our attitude to the community? Are we going to do our research in this community, or are we going to have the community as equal partners? And this is, Laura talked about Carl Taylor, who I also knew quite well, and he was saying for his particular dissertation that the most useful, the best researchers were actually members of the community, that the community were involved as equal partners in his seminal treatise. So this whole thing, if we can think about our own attitudes, are we going to do this research on this community, or are we working with this community as equal partners, whether you're working in a program or whether you're going to do research? It's a fundamental change which a lot of people, we've got 60 years of experience here, plus about another, we've probably got over 100 years of experience here. And I'm sure we'd all agree that this thing of, is it community as equal partners? Because they've got unique knowledge in relationship to how are they going to comply with the treatment. Okay, we produce all the good evidence, that's us, the scientific bit. But if they don't believe it, if they don't take it on board and comply, okay, you know, it's best to give malaria, not the details of the malaria treatment, not the clinical stuff, but what time of day is it best to reach the mothers? When will mothers be available? This sort of thing is all stuff which is it's hidden knowledge that's part of the community, which you don't get unless your attitude to the community is right. Now, some of you will probably think this is a load of crap, but once you get a bit of experience, it's not.
Can I just add one thing?
Sure.
I was going to say, for me and you, I can see that this totally resonates, because if the community doesn't see that there is any problem, that there's a high level of maternal mortality, for example,
sure.
Or that it's okay to get married at age 13 or something like that, if they don't see there's any problem with the thing that you're thinking that might need to be addressed, then it's a showstopper. Nothing's going to happen, because that motivation is needed. The leadership, the political will is needed so those norms do start to shift. I mean, FGM is another example. It may be a practice that people, where the norms are that this is totally fine. But if you go in and say that this is wrong, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, I would also say that in T-scale, you don't want to change, you don't necessarily change social norms, you're changing specific health behaviors. So you're working with the community in order to identify what are specific behaviors or what are specific things that can be done to improve health. Talking about that, but also looking at the entire strategy for developing the community, socioeconomically, and health. Many of the cultural norms that are negative have to do with things that are, cultural norms that make women, put women in certain situations that are detrimental to their health, like FGM and other types of things. And really, when you look at empowerment, it's a deep scale, it's a lot of issues of empowerment and the issues of power. Okay, who has the power? And when it's empowerment, it's not empowerment, it's taking off the disempowerment. Because women are naturally empowered. People are naturally empowered, they have their own energy, they want to do things, but women are disempowered because nobody gave them the education, nobody taught them anything, what they need to know, and they put cultural strictures on their behaviors. And so what we need to do is stop the disempowerment, okay? Which is different from changing cultural norms.
How many T-scale people are going to improve in terms of health outcomes and feedback with the community, and compared it to the communities that have T-scale and don't get
them? Okay. This whole program, the class program, was designed on the new criteria or basis of T-scale methodology. That was from 1994 when it started. It was a small pilot project with about 19 health facilities, and then scaled up to one third of the country. And then since then, we've been working on improving the quality. showed great, much higher coverage, almost quite the coverage of teen channel and child services in the class versus the non-class, also better equity, better access to medicine, and better satisfaction.
We have to finish now. There's one other point which I think probably is worthwhile making, and that is money is still needed. Money is needed for these programs and things to produce results. You know, money, particularly at the early stage. So definitely the fact that money has decreased is going to affect programs. But even with money, you're not going to get results unless you do it in the right way. And that's what we're saying.
Well, I was just going to say that, I mean, power priorities are real. It's not like they're going to dissolve and disappear and that you're not going to have to worry about it. So it's learning how to manage those and giving people access who may not have access to type of relationships, some sort of venue to get access to that relationship. So there are a lot of programs in which you can do that, but it's important to give people who may not normally have a voice, and sometimes it is connecting through those powerful resources and learning in innovative ways to do that. I think there is some literature on that, whether you call it, you know, linking social capital, kind of how I find it, but I think there's a lot of other ways to just sort of think about that and working through those.
This is also, if you look at it in the context of the TCL methodology, where you're looking at new relations between government partners and community partners, and the government really has to change its target and what it thinks in its relationship with the community. And as I present this to different NGOs, this model, many of them also, similar to the government, even the outside in, they change agents. They're coming from organizations that have this traditional way of working, with a top down, you know, we're making decisions, we're calling the shots. And they find it difficult for some to apply, even though they want to apply to the methodology, if they have a structure already in place in their own organization, which seems to be. And so it's a very, I mean, you have to have like key people on the inside that are, you have to change your own organization first.
It just seems to me, I'm a lawyer at the time, that this makes so much sense. There are these so many policies at these higher levels that influence the local level.
We have to finish, but within the International Health section, we're talking about these sort of things all the time. There's a particularly community-based primary healthcare working group is one of our groups. Laura's group, maternal and child health. I'm the chair, and I work across all these things. There's quite a few other groups. So we're talking about this type of stuff all the time. So I would suggest one thing you should do if you're interested in this area is join the International Health section, and if you'd like to, you can come along tonight from 6 to 9 o'clock in room 258B for the International Health Awards and Social Evening. So that's a plug. Now I'll make a second plug, and that is there's a group called the CORE Group, CORE group.org. Look on their website. This is where Beth, I'm associated with them, and on there are the not-for-profits and NGOs who really deliver USH child survival programs around the world. So they're interesting groups to get involved. You know, there's a lot that's come up today. We can't give you all the details on there. But that really, we've touched today in these four presentations on key holes with a lot of programs. It's not just money. You do need some money, particularly at the development stage, and once it's established, you know, a lot less money should be there. You don't really want outside money to control. But even if there's lots of money, things are not done the right way, they won't produce sustainable results. So I'd like you all to put your hands together to thank our presenters, and hope to see you later.